We have before us proposed amendments to House Bill 5077-4. Sue McLashen,
We actually get into a synopsis of the bill, I would like to discuss some issues relating to public testimony, and I would like to have it put on the record that the Education Subcommittee has done extensive public testimony on the state school fund, and we did public hearings on the bill on March the 24th and the 25th, and did public testimony on March the 26th during two different times in the day, and also did public testimony on March 27th. And we will be making the record of that public testimony referenced as we work through this bill. So I would just like to have that put into the permanent record of the proceedings relating to this bill. Also, in view of the fact that we are on a very tight time frame here to get this bill through the process and all the other budget and revenue bills through the process, but the ability for the public to give us their feelings on the bill are really critical. We've done a couple of very innovative things, and what I would propose to you is that we hold the public record for this bill open for 1 week, starting tomorrow morning, and that we've made a website available for people to email into us, and the address for that website is state.schoolfund@state.or.us, and I'll say that one more time. That's state.schoolfund, and schoolfund is all one word, @state.or.us. That website will be operational tomorrow morning. And also, those wishing to use the more traditional snail mail method of communicating with us are very welcome to send written testimony into State School Fund. The address is H178, which is the Legislative Fiscal Office, 900 Court Street, Northeast in Salem, and the zip code here is 97301. So once again, we will keep the public record open for 1 week starting tomorrow morning to receive this very important input from people.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. So this is, as you say, in addition to the testimony already received over the four-plus days of public hearings.
That's correct.
Thank you. All right. Sue McLashen, you want to
walk you through the amendments? Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you have before you both a copy of the Dash 4 amendments as well as a summary that I've prepared for you, hopefully to give you just a snapshot of what's in the amendments. And this would be the State School Fund Appropriation Bill. 5077, by the way, was just a blank appropriation bill, so we're deleting the language that in the Dash 4 amendments, deleting the language in the original bill and replacing it. The Dash 4 amendments start out with a preamble, which I won't spend a lot of time on. I don't spend any time on it, Mr. Chair.
That'd be fine.
Just go right to the dollar amounts. You'll see that in Sections 1 and 2, that appropriates general fund to the Department of Education for the State School Fund, and there are two sections, the first one pertaining to the 03-04 school year, the second one to the 04-05 school year. Section 3 has to do with allocation of and limitation for lottery funds. Again, that limitation is for the Department of Education to distribute those funds through the State School Fund. Section 4 has to do with limitation for distributing $131 million from the Education Stability Fund, and that's conditioned on House Bill 3642, and it does make some assumptions as to line games. So if you've probably seen some numbers like 108, 124 million, and this 131 does assume implementation of line games and therefore increased lottery revenues. There is a special purpose appropriation to the emergency fund in the second year of the biennium. That's for $50 million, and that is contingent upon the Department of Education reporting to the Emergency Board on increases or decreases in federal funds that are available to schools and education service districts. And Section 10 in the bill also provides that if any of that amount is not allocated to the department or the state school fund, that the unexpended balance would revert to the general purpose emergency fund on November 1st, 2004. All those sources combined total $4.966 billion, as you can see on the chart that I provided to you. There's trigger language in the bill, and that starts with Section 5 and goes through Section 9, basically. And what that trigger language does, in summary, the Department of Administrative Services is directed to determine, as of June 2004, the excess general fund and state lottery fund revenues over the 2003 close of session forecast for the 2003-05 biennium. And after deducting $200 million, the Department of Administrative Services is to calculate 43% of the remaining, or of that excess beyond $200 million. And then it is also to determine the amount of available lottery funds that are in the Administrative Services Economic Development Fund on July 1st, 2004 that have not yet been allocated by law. And the 43% of the excess is intended to go to a school improvement fund in the second year of the biennium. That amount is first to be funded with the available net lottery revenues that have not yet been allocated by law, and then the balance would be made up with any available general fund resources. The school improvement fund is capped. It's capped at $250 million. Finally, sections 11 and 12 are just standard sections that occur in the state school fund bill. They relate to the legislature's requirement to replace revenue lost by the public school system under Measure 5. And section 13 just provides that the allocation of lottery revenues under earlier sections in the bill, sections 3 and 7, is subject to any dedicated or obligated uses of lottery funds, such as the 18% of lottery funds going into the Education Stability Fund and 15% to parks, and there are a few other minor dedicated uses. And then finally, Section 14 is your emergency, declares an emergency and makes the bill effective July 1st, 2003. The other thing that I would point out in that chart is that there's one source that's of revenue for schools that's assumed in the plan, and it's not included in this bill. And that source is capping the early payment discount on property taxes. It's now 3%. My understanding is the cap would lower that to 1.5%. Mm-hmm. And that's supposed to generate roughly $83.87 million for the biennium. So when you total up all these resources for the schools, it totals to $5.3 billion.
All right. Thank you, Sue. We have before us the Dash 4 amendments, House Bill 5077.
Mr. Co-Chair, before we move the bill, there is a huge amount of discussion going on in the building right now about the different funding levels, and there's been a lot of work that's gone on in the Education Ways and Means Subcommittee and in various work groups around the Capitol to try to come up with what a realistic assumption is. And I'm wondering if Ms. McGlashan, you could recap for us some of the discussions that we've had that have taken us to the 5.05 number. And also I know that there has been a lot of discussion about the impact that the federal No Child Left Behind legislation is going to have on the need for funding in the state. And if you could give any information that you have to the committee members relating to money that's going to be coming to us from our federal partners to deal with those issues.
Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan, I did pass out for you a document that discusses cost drivers in K-12 and some of the changes in some those cost drivers and changes in assumptions since the development of, for example, the governor's original, his balanced budget for K-12. And as you know, there's been a reduction in the PERS rate, a rather significant reduction. The governor's budget assumed a 16.71% rate, and now the rate is 11.11%. And just as a rule of thumb, for each percentage change in that PERS rate, it's about $50 million. So that drop from 16.71 to 11.11 is about $240, $250 million.
So quite a sizable impact to the bottom line there.
That's correct. There have also been some changes in the projections for compensation increases in schools, work that has been done by the Department of Education. They look at the historical trends in salary growth for school district personnel and also health benefits costs. And based on some more recent information on the number of retirements because of changes in the PERS system and also just some indications from recent negotiations and settlements, it looks like the overall factor for increases in the average teacher salary that would be built into the model, those increases have gone down. The original factor for growth was 2.4% in 03-04 and about 2.5% in 04-05, and it looks like now the average teacher salary, after taking into account retirements, things like that, is 0.2% in 03-04, and then it goes up to about 2.8% in 04-05. So there have been some changes there, and we estimate that kind of slower salary growth in the increased and the increased retirements will make a difference of about $85 million. There have also been some drops in the expected implicit price deflators, or what's been developed by the Office of Economic Analysis and what we use to calculate inflation on services and supplies. And it looks like that could make a difference of about $16 million, having those implicit price deflators go down. Probably the one that's a little more difficult to calculate is any increase in the health benefits costs. We've heard different information from different sources. We did have testimony from the Oregon School Boards Association representative that he thought that a 9% increase would be a reasonable percentage to use, and I believe the governor's balanced budget actually used 12% per year. So if you assume the 9%, you see some savings there as well. So there have been a number of factors that we have recalculated that appear to save money in this budget.
We also are expecting to receive some increased revenue in order to cover some of the issues that are related to No Child Left Behind. Do you have any information about what we can expect from our federal partners?
We do have some updated information from the Department of Education on those federal revenues. I think we had the discussion earlier that it's hard to know whether or not those funds will cover the full cost of implementation of the Act. Different states have done calculations, and there's some belief that what dollars the federal government is providing won't cover the expenses. That's not, I would say, a universally accepted conclusion, at least by the current administration in Washington. And the federal U.S. Department of Education, they both believe that the additional funding is adequate to implement the new law. And based on information from the Department of Education, Oregon Department of Education, it looks like from the major sources of federal programs like the Title II state grants for improving teacher quality and some of the Title I money, including Reading First state grants and then the basic Title I grants to schools, there's an increase of slightly over $100 million.
So we can expect to receive then from the federal government slightly over $100 million to deal with issues related to implementing No Child Left Behind. Does this also include the money for putting in the off-year testing that we need to develop and finish that part of the testing system?
Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan, no, that's actually separate from this figure that I just gave you. The figure that I gave you has to do with specific grant and aid programs in the department's budget. The assessment money actually goes to the department in their operations program, so that's over and above the $100 million.
So there is additional money in the department's operation budget to cover the implementation, the development and the implementation and the data collection and all the things that are necessary to go about doing the tests or the testing under No Child Left Behind.
Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan, they are receiving federal funds for the assessment.
Thank you.
Once again, the dash fours are...
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Morgan.
Motion. I would move the dash four amendments into House Bill 5077.
Representative Morgan moves that we adopt the dash four amendments to House Bill 5077. Discussion. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope you'll bear with me for a couple few questions because I haven't served on the Education Committee. And of course, we haven't had a lot of time to study this, but I just want some clarity in terms of my understanding of exactly what's in the package. We're talking about a 5.05 hard money K through 12 budget, and that would included in that amount $50 million special appropriation. That would only be triggered if federal funds to supplement that amount weren't available?
Ms. McGlashan, could you clarify?
Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan and Representative Hansen, the way the bill reads is that if I can refer you to Section 10. It establishes the $50 million appropriation. It appropriates it to the emergency board and can be allocated from the emergency board to the Department of Education for the state school fund after receiving from the Department of Education a report that describes any increases or decreases in federal funds that are available to school districts or education service districts. So it doesn't specify anything other than the emergency board receiving that report, and it would be up to the emergency board to decide if they, in fact, wanted to allocate that money.
Okay. So we're talking about a $4,966 million budget plus the ability to go back to the emergency board for an extra $50 million.
My understanding, and please correct me, Ms. McGlashan, if I don't have the correct understanding here, that the $50 million is a special purpose appropriation to the emergency board, so it can't be used for anything else. And the purpose of it is to be used to reconcile the school budget in case we receive extra federal funds.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, the $50 million that you see in this chart here is included in the $4.966 billion amount. If you drop down and pick up that $83.87 million and add those two numbers together, that gives you the $5.05 billion. And then up to $250 million.
And then could you clarify the purpose of the $50 million?
The purpose of the $50 million is to ensure that the state school fund budget stays at a base of 5.05 with a separate issue being related to the trigger of the $250 million cap to add back fund or the appropriation that goes into the school improvement fund.
Okay. I think I'm tracking the amounts, but I'm not I'm not tracking the theory and practice in terms of why to use the $50 million special appropriation.
Let me give you a hypothetical.
Does it add flexibility or?
Let me give you a hypothetical situation, okay. What may be the case here is that the department may end up receiving more federal funding than we're anticipating will be dispersed to the school districts in this budget. If that is the case, then the special purpose appropriation to the e-board will be used to balance this budget back down to the level that we send it out at.
Okay. Okay. The other questions would relate to the trigger. And if we could go over that for me one more time. I think, would my understand, I guess in relationship to the kicker, okay, we have, if our projection, if we have revenue that exceeds by $200 million, our projected revenue, at that point, 43% of that money would then be earmarked for K through 12 education.
Well, it's somewhat more complicated than that because of the lottery fund component. So, Ms. McGlashan, could you take him through how the computation?
And then one other question that maybe you can answer at the same time. If the kicker would then kick, would we be responsible to repay that money to the taxpayers in the next biennium?
Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan, Representative Hansen. First of all, as to the calculation, the Department of Administrative Services will look at, in June 2004, will look at the updated forecast for the 0305 biennium. And assuming there's some excess over what was anticipated for 0305 as of the close of session, then they will look to see, you know, is it more than $200 million? And if it is, any excess over that $200 million is what is subject to the 43% calculation. And say, for example, the forecast goes up by $300 million, then the school improvement fund would be increased by $43 million because they would get 43% of the excess $100 million. So that's how that calculation works. And the funding sources are a combination of lottery fund and general fund, which is one reason why, or which is the reason why the Department of Administrative Services is directed to look at then what's in the Administrative Services Economic Development Fund, where the net lottery revenues would be the excess net lottery revenues that hadn't yet been allocated by law. So I hope that answers the first question. The second question you had was about the kicker, and my understanding is that what would happen is the kicker would still be in effect, so that if this money is used, in fact, to the school improvement fund or for some other reason, somehow the legislature has to find the money to then refund whatever amounts are due taxpayers under the kicker law.
And then what, final question on the kicker, piece. What would be the total amount of increased revenue that the state would have to find to get to the $250 million?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, just as a rule of thumb, and again, it can get a little complicated because of both the lottery fund and the general fund coming into play, but just as a rule of thumb, if you've got, you know, $200 million that you have to set aside for an ending balance or reserves, then in order to generate that $250 million, you would need about $600 million more, and then you take 43% of that to get the $250 million for the school improvement fund. So you're looking at about an increase of about close to $800 million over the close of session forecast for that cap to be reached for the school improvement fund.
That would certainly solve a lot of our problems.
A lot more than just this one.
Yeah.
Okay, I think I understand the proposal.
Okay. Further discussion? Representative Patridge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just, I realize the triggers are very high and a very high bar, but I think that it's important that we realize, too, that we are trying to provide an opportunity for schools in Oregon and have tried to prioritize them, and that really we've tried to link kind of the economic prosperity of the entire state with our investment in our schools. I think that at least this gives an opportunity for an upside for K-12 education, and I certainly appreciate the work that the good representative from Roseburg has put forth, not only in working with the QEM model and the PERS savings and the other items to provide us this budget and the work of her committee. So,
thank you. If no further discussion on this amendment, the clerk could call the roll, please, on the amendment to dash 4 of House Bill 5077.
Representative Morgan?
Aye.
Representative Hanson?
No.
Representative Patrick?
Aye.
Chair Miller?
Votes aye. The amendment is agreed to.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morgan.
I move House Bill 5077 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Morgan moves House Bill 5077 to the floor, do pass recommendation. Discussion? Representative Hanson.
Well, as no great surprise, in light of my past vote, I'll be voting no on moving the bill forward. I do appreciate Representative Patridge talking about raising the bar. I think we have raised the bar in this one area, but unfortunately, it's just where the trigger is. The serious nature of it, though, is that Oregon's public schools are in dire shape. In the last biennium, we've lost over 1,000 teachers. The level of what our local school districts are able to do now simply isn't good enough. 5.5 budget, and that's what I think we're clearly talking about, is a 5.05 budget. The listing of it at as close to 5.3, I think, is just a pipe dream. Certainly, no one would be more excited than I am if there was $800 million of additional revenue throughout the next biennium. But even at that, we'd further complicate it by borrowing 43% of that to pay back in the next biennium. I think there's a lot more straightforward ways to fund education than through these types of manipulations. But the bottom line that we're talking about, not the 5.3, but the 5.05, is going to cause a great deal of anguish among some of our districts. I come from Portland. Portland taxpayers have stepped forward and have provided a way to stabilize their schools, but those options aren't available for a lot of other districts. A straightforward, honest 5.3 budget would enable Klamath Falls City to restore 31 positions in Booster Athletics. I'll give a couple other just brief examples. Salem Kaiser, coupled with PERS savings in a budget of $5.3 billion, could restore 90 or more lost teachers. More reasonable class sizes, restoration of middle school athletics. McMinnville, with a statewide budget of 5.3, the district would be able to restore elementary PE, music counseling, and 2 lost classroom teachers. List goes on throughout the whole state. The president has said no child should be left behind. I don't think any district should be left behind. We've got peculiar situations of a lot of different districts, a lot of different circumstances throughout the whole state. A $5.3 billion education budget would raise the bar for all of the districts in the state, so they could all provide adequate education for our kids. And I think I won't be able to support this attempt at school funding because it simply doesn't raise the bar for all of the districts high enough. At that point, I'll be voting no probably very, very quickly.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair, if I might just make a comment. Through the work that has been done over this session in the Education Subcommittee, one of the things that has become very clear to us is the disparity amongst the assumptions that were used to build the budgets in the individual districts. And it is very difficult and it's very dangerous to start talking about what can be cut and what can be added back without knowing what the rates were used for PERS and what the rates were used for inflation and what the rates were used for health care increases and those kinds of things. And I think that one of the things that all of us became very aware of in the Education Subcommittee was that when you're working with budgets where upwards of 85% of the funding is related to payroll costs, that any changes in the payroll costs, whether they're up or down, even if they're very small, have a profound impact and an important impact on the bottom line. And part of the work that's been done through updating the assumptions in the quality education model, I think, have pointed out that what a little bit of change in the rate that PERS will be cast at, the profound impact that that has on bottom line budgets. And so when we get into a position where we're tossing around information without any detail about how the numbers were arrived at, I think a great deal of the discussion just kind of starts taking place on a rhetorical level, and we can't really get into where they were with those variable cost assumptions when they built their budgets. And it very much complicates the discussion.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You bet. This has been a tough session, obviously, and one of the things I've said time and again, and it is a scary prospect for us as well as maybe all those here in the room. If the economy improved to a sufficient degree, none of us here would be opposed, other than the fright of having to come back into a special session, to return and enhance the appropriation for K through 12. We've clearly been under the stress of a declining economy, and each of our special sessions have been dedicated to reducing budgets throughout state government. I can recall with some degree of pleasure, frankly, that in past sessions I was pleased to be, when I was in the Senate, pleased to vote, I think probably each of my four sessions over there, to increase the appropriation from the former governor's requested budget. I'm proud to do so, proud to support K through 12. A lot of people reflected on that, and they said, well, one of the reasons you could do it is because you had more money than you had before. Well, that may be true, but the response was that we valued education and we made that increased appropriation. When we brought out the co-chair's budget April 17, Senator Schrader and I and the rest of the Ways and Means Committee brought out a document that was less than the governor's budget. The governor's budget, he designed and or at least delivered to us back in December of 2002, $1 billion ago to the plus, states for K through 12 education, my budget takes the first step in halting the downward spiral of state support. It will allow schools to begin the restoration of program cuts resulting from state budget reductions. Funding is also included to expand reading programs in our schools, leveraging private funds and using volunteers to assure that students read at or above their grade level by the time they leave elementary school. For these benefits to reach students means that local school districts must adjust priorities to put the maximum resources into the classroom rather than administrative expenses. He goes on to say that the budget provides $5.05 billion for school spending. This represents a 7.7% increase in state funding compared to the 2001-03 level. This level of funding prevents further erosion of our school system. It will allow schools to restore many of the program cuts that resulted from revenue shortfalls and sets the expectation that class days will not be reduced with this funding level. One of the ambitions that the Ways and Means Committee had was to climb out from where we set the appropriation level at in April, to make every effort to readjust other budgets to try to achieve the governor's funding level. This bill will do that on its face with respect to the 5.05 budget level, and it also will state, and I think many districts are realizing in their budgeting process, the additional PERS savings that were not incorporated fully in the governor's budget, and that is real money. I was listening to a press conference prior to coming to this meeting today, and one of the districts I represent, the Tigard-Tualatin School District, was referenced, and I'm interested to have learned that their budgeting was dictated by the assumption that we would have a 5.05 funding level for K through 12. And they were able to, using that budget, keep both swimming pools open and gave the district, or the district was able to provide raises to the staff and retain full high school sports. As many people know, we've asked people in this process and the other budgets that we are working to have our state employees stay level for the next 2 years. We don't want to necessarily become those who determine what is negotiated locally, but clearly the assumption requires an incredible understanding and cooperation when it comes to negotiations at the local level. To the extent districts go beyond what we can afford, that can have some negative results for our kids. In any event, this bill has... let's take a vote on House Bill 5077 to the floor. Do pass recommendation. Clerk, call the roll, please.
Representative Morgan?
Aye.
Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Patrick?
Aye.
Chair Miller?
Votes aye. House Bill 5077 is passed to the floor. Do pass recommendation. The work session on House Bill 5077 is closed. We adjourn. Carrier Representative Morgan.
I'd be glad to carry it.